We're going to be looking at a text from Matthew chapter 7. We've been in the Sermon on the Mount, and so we're going to be looking at a text from Matthew chapter 7, beginning in verse 1 today, going through verse 5. Now, this is a passage on judging. Preaching on judging is always tricky because you get into the difference in judging and discerning, and that gets complicated. So we're going to try to keep this simple this morning so that no one stands up and goes, "You're wrong," because I don't need that. I'm still weak. We don't want to deal with that this morning. Okay, so first of all, Jesus starts in this section of his sermon, and again, it's important to remember that he's really dealing with two distinct groups in this sermon. He's got this vast number of poor people who have come to hear his message, but there are also Pharisees and Sadducees in the audience, and he's preaching to them as well. And so he kind of gets into this statement. He says, "Do not judge, so that you will not be judged. For in the way you judge, you will be judged, and by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you." Now, one of the things that's really interesting about Jesus's ministry, and this is one of those things a lot of times we don't always connect this, but there is a very common theme that Jesus uses in his ministry about us being treated how we treat other people. Now, if you're thinking, really, well, okay, well, let's look at this. So he says, "Do not judge so that you will not be judged, for in the way you judge, you'll be judged." So he says, the way you judge people is how I'm going to judge you. Can anybody think of another time Jesus uses this kind of terminology? How about the Lord's Prayer? "Forgive us our debts as what? As we forgive our debtors." Now, I wrote some of these down because in my weakened state, I might not remember them all. So he says that, do unto others, you guys remember that one, the golden rule. Do unto others as you would what? Have it done unto you. So this is a fairly common theme in Jesus' teaching. Forgive us our debts, do unto others, judge not so that you won't be judged. Now, how many of you today would feel super comfortable standing in front of God and having him deal with you for eternity on the line the way you deal with other people? Now that is an introspective question, isn't it? You start thinking about, okay, how do I deal with other people? How much patience do I have with other people? How quick am I to judge other people? How reluctant am I to forgive other people? You start thinking about all those things, and then you start imagining that if something happened to you today and you died and you went and you stood before God, and God looked at you and said, okay, the good news is I'm a benevolent and kind God. The bad news is I'm not judging you on my standard, I'm judging you on your own. So I'm gonna treat you today for eternity on the line, I'm gonna treat you the way you have treated other people. Would you hear that from God and say, that's good news? Or would you go, oh no. That's a hard question, isn't it? Because when we really start to reflect on how we deal with people, and you know, I don't think this could be overstated. We live in a time right now of really elevated emotions, really elevated levels of anger and animosity, and you see it in the church. You see it among church people. And you see how quick we are sometimes to lash out at people that we perceive as enemies. And we have this righteous indignation. We talked about this in seniors Bible study Sunday when we're studying James. I mean, Thursday when we're studying James. We have this concept of righteous indignation that we have a right to be that way because God would want us to be like that. But that's actually not true because in James said that there is no righteousness in anger. So when you start to think about all these things that have built up in us and how we deal with other people and how we judge them and how we treat them and how we forgive them and how we deal with them. And then you hear what Jesus tells these people. He says, hey, listen, you guys need to be aware of this. You don't judge so that you won't be judged. For in the way you judge, you will be judged. How many of you have ever made an incorrect assumption about somebody? I'm shocked at the number of hands that did not go up. So those, some of you are like, never been wrong in my life. I've nailed everyone. It is amazing how we can see people sometimes and make these grand assumptions. It's funny. On Tuesdays, I go to lunch with a group of preachers, and all you need to know about this group of preachers is that me and Jim are there. That's really all you need to know. Me and Jim are there, and we are the party. We are the party. So we're at this restaurant one day, and we're eating lunch, and I don't remember what it was that I had said. But Jim had started laughing, and if you've never seen Jim Cooper really get tickled, it is a sight to behold. Jim's face had turned red, and I got with the white beard and the white hair, the red face just stands out. And everybody in the place is thinking Santa Claus, red face, white beard, and he's laughing, and he can't. And now he gets Tim Turner laughing. And if any of you know Tim Turner is the loudest person in America. And if you're thinking, no, Stuart, that's you. You haven't met Tim. Tim is louder than me. Is that not true, Sue? Tim is louder than me. So you've got Tim and Jim and me, and we're laughing, and Keith's laughing. And this waitress comes up, and she goes, you guys okay? We're like, yeah. And she said, what are you guys? And Tim goes, we're ministers. And she goes, what? She said, you can't be ministers. You're having too much fun. And there's the stereotype, right? There's the assumption. You can't, if you're a Christian, you can't laugh. You can't have a good time. We make these judgments about things all the time. And everybody does it. We've got stereotypes about people. We've got assumptions about people in certain situations. And they're not based on any fact. They're just based on our judgment without enough information. And Jesus looking at these people, and he's really addressing the behavior of the Pharisees here, but it's a stern warning to the church today. This business that we engage in of looking at other people and making assumptions is dangerous. Because when we do that, we are in fact inviting that type of judgment on us from God. And Jesus couldn't say it any clearer. For in the way you judge, you will be judged. By your standard of measure. So Jesus says, on judgment day, you're going to be judged the way you judge other people. You're going to be forgiven the way you forgive other people. You're going to be treated the way you've treated other people. And this is a common theme in Jesus' ministry. And so this morning, as we look at this text and you start some self-reflection on this question, this is a really important thing. This notion that we will not all be judged the same, but we'll be judged the way we judged people. Now, I can't speak for any of you, but that scares me a little bit. That scares me a little bit. Because I maybe nobody else in the room will admit it, but I am prone on occasion to judge people. I see people and I'm like, yeah, I know why that person's in that situation. I don't know. But I've got these assumptions in my head, you know, that come up, and sometimes they come out before you even think about it. It's almost like we're programmed to be like that. And so Jesus offers this warning. Okay, in verse 3 he says, why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? How many of you are much more inclined to see somebody else's problems than your own? My wife, she gets so irritated at me. I am one of those people that I believe the doctor should be behind some glass and that you break the glass in case of emergency. So if I'm at the doctor's office, you know something has gone terribly wrong with Stuart, because I don't like to go to the doctor. So when I got tested positive for COVID, I was like, yeah, I'm just sit here and ride it out, you know, just ride it out. As soon as Stephanie gets sick, you know what I tell her? You should go to the doctor. That irritates her so much, because as soon as she gets sick, I'm like, why don't you go to the doctor? And she goes, why don't you go? And I said, because I don't need to go. Well, that irritates her more, because now I'm implying that I'm tougher than she is. And that's a mistake, because then she'll remind me that she's had 2 children. But that's kind of how I am. I will tell somebody else in a heartbeat, you know, you need to go get that checked. You should go to the doctor. But I don't want to go to the doctor. Why is it I see the need in other people to go to the doctor, but I don't see the need in me? Because I'm stuck. Thank you. Well, thank you, Miss Cooper. Belinda just dropped that like it was hot. You're stubborn. At least she didn't say you're just a man. I guess that's probably what she was thinking. Jim, is that what she was thinking? Jim's pleading the fifth. The reality is, this is how most of us are in a lot of aspects of our life. We are much more inclined to look at someone else and identify their needs than we are our own. And that's not always necessarily a sign of some sort of evil or some sort of wickedness. It's just how we are. We tend not to be particularly self-introspective. We don't really look at our own selves that much. We tend to look at other people. And sometimes it's because we're more concerned about other people than we are ourselves. I think that's certainly possible in some cases. But one of the things that is a critical element of Christianity is the ability to do self-reflection. The ability for us to look at ourselves and look at what's going on in our own life and try to get that fixed before we try to fix other people. Now, one of the most obvious examples of this, and it's a passage we hear all the time. When the Apostle Paul is talking about the Lord's Supper, what does he tell us we're supposed to do? He says, when you partake of this, let a man do what? Examine himself. Why would Paul tell us to do that? It's a reminder to us that a critical element of meeting around this table, a critical element of being in relationship and communion with Christ, is our ability to look at ourselves and see what needs to be addressed, to see what needs to be fixed, to see what needs to be improved. It's not our job to sit around during communion and look at other people and go, I don't think they should be taking communion today because they have issues. That's not our business. That gets back to the judgment thing. It's not our job to judge somebody else's worthiness to partake of the Lord's Supper. Paul says your primary focus when you sit down around this table is to examine yourself. What do I need to do better? What do I need to address in my own life? Where am I falling short in my relationship with God? How could I be a better Christian, a better spouse, a better parent, a better child, a better family member, a better church member? How can I improve myself? How can I do that? And so when Jesus says this, he says, look, you guys, you're looking at the speck that is in your brother's eye. And notice the language he uses. You see the speck in their eye, but what do you miss in yours? The log. The log. Have you ever had somebody who had a lot of issues try to tell you how to be better? And you're just looking at like, really? Really? I had a friend one time who was going to go to marriage counseling. He was going to go to marriage counseling. And because he was a friend of mine, we talked about it and said, you know, probably you should go to somebody else because we're good friends and I think it'd be better. But I would suggest you find a Christian counselor to go to. Well, he didn't. But he did find some counselor to go to. So we're having lunch a couple weeks later and we're sitting there talking. I said, well, how did your first session go? He goes, well, we're going to have to find somebody else. I said, what happened? He said, well, we were sitting there talking to the counselor, and the counselor told us that she'd been divorced 4 times. And I said, this person's a marriage counselor. He goes, yeah, yeah. I said, she'd been divorced 4 times. He goes, yeah, yeah. I said, did she offer an explanation for that? He goes, yeah. She says that through experience, she had learned everything there was about wrecking a marriage, and she knew how to not do it. I didn't even know. I that's like one of those things where you feel like there's a punchline somewhere, and it's any minute now there's going to be a punchline, and there's no punchline. So they decided to go see somebody else who maybe had only been divorced once or twice, I guess. But, you know, that. You sit there and you think, how does a person who's been divorced 4 times give marriage advice? Would you take marriage advice from somebody who'd been divorced 4 times? Probably not.
They say experience is the best teacher.
It's kind of like it. And listen, we see this all the time. One of the things that has been fascinating to me in the last 2 years are the number of amateur, what do they call, immunologists? People that study viruses? The number of amateur doctors on social media and in your little circle of friends who will be happy to tell you all about the Rona and how it works and what you should do. And, hey, take this. By the way, there are 74 vitamins you should take when you have the Rona if you ask enough people. And I'm almost certain somebody told me to take kryptonite. I don't know. I mean, there was an extensive list of vitamins that you should take. And I said, well, how about if you just take a multivitamin? And they were like, no, that's not a high enough dose. But, you know, everybody's got advice on how to deal with coronavirus, regardless of their knowledge of it. It's just they got their own experience. We see this when you have a cold, right? People tell you what you should do when you have the flu. You know, everybody's an expert on stuff, and they've got their opinions, and that's fine. But here's the thing Jesus is addressing. He says, look, it's not that it's not okay to help people. He's not saying that. He's not saying there's anything wrong with trying to help somebody get the speck out of their eye. He doesn't say there's anything wrong with that. What does he say you need to do first? Get the log out of yours. Get the log out of yours. Deal with the issues you've got to deal with in your own life before you start trying to help other people with theirs. He says, how can you say to your brother, let me take that speck out of your eye, and behold, the log is in your own eye? I mean, that's a great question, right? How in the world, as Christians, And this is really, I think, what gets to the core of the effectiveness of the church. How do we, as church people, go out into the community of non-believers and evangelize people and try to tell them how to get their life with God squared away when our relationship with God isn't squared away? How do we do that? How do you do that? How do you go to somebody and say, hey, let me tell you about a relationship with Jesus? And they look at you and go like, how are you going to tell me about a relationship with Jesus? I know what kind of person you are. I know how you act. I know how you talk. I know how you gossip. I know how you do these things. How are you going to tell me about being Christ-like? And it's a good question, right? It's a reasonable question for us to ask. It's like, how in the world can we go out into the world and tell people what it means to have a relationship with Jesus when people look at us and question if we do? And that's what Jesus is communicating to these people. He says, look, there's a problem when we try to go out and do this because our credibility is in question. In any of you ever been to somebody and like a doctor or a mechanic or somebody else, you know, a repairman of some kind, and in talking to them, you questioned their credibility? And you thought, I don't think this person knows anything. I'm not sure this person is qualified to work on this. Well, any of you remember those great Holiday Inn Express commercials? Where you say, are you a doctor? No, but I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night. You remember those commercials? Those were great commercials. Any of you ever encountered some of those people? I used to work, when I was a teenager, I worked for my daddy at a TV repair place. And this lady brought a TV in one day. And this is an older lady, very sweet lady. She brought her TV in, set it down. She said, my TV, the picture doesn't have any color. And I was probably 14, 15, and I'm writing up the ticket. And so I look at the back of the TV, and it says on the back of the TV, black and white TV. So, easy, Jimmy. So I look at the lady, and I said, ma'am, this is a black and white TV. She said, this TV used to have color. I said, ma'am, this TV never had color. And then she got really angry, and she told me I didn't know what I was talking about. So I said, hang on a second, ma'am. I'll be right back. Dad! So Dad comes over. I said, Dad, I got a problem. He goes, what? I said, I'm filling out this lady's ticket. He goes, okay. I said, she said her TV doesn't have no color. He said, well, write that on the ticket. I said, the TV's black and white, Dad. He goes, oh. He goes, So he goes over, starts talking to the lady. Here's the problem. She had taken it to somebody else, and that guy had given her an estimate on what it would cost to put color on her television set. He said, I can fix this. But when he told her the price, she decided, I'll take it somewhere else and see if I can get a better price. And so now my father's trying to explain this late. Ma'am, you can't make this a color TV. You can't. There's no way to do it. It's a black and white TV. But the problem was she had been to somebody else who wasn't credible, who didn't know what they were talking about. They didn't know. Either that or they were trying to take advantage of this lady, which was certainly a possibility because there are people who would do that. And so this idea, we all get it. We've all been in situations where we've talked to somebody in a professional field and thought, I don't know if I trust this person. I don't know if they know what they're talking about. And there's something usually in that conversation that makes you think that. And so you think about the effectiveness of the church today, and you think about, you know, our job today is not to look around and judge other people, but this is a kind of an introspective question, is if you were going to go out and witness to people in your class in school or your fellow workers at where you work or the people you hang out with in retirement, if you wanted to witness to them, Would they see you as credible? So that's the question, right? Is there a log that's sticking out of your eye that is so big they would look at you and go, "You're not credible. You can't even see. With that thing sticking out your eye, you can't see. I'm not letting you try to get a speck out of my eye. You can't see with that great big log in yours." And so that's the $100,000 question, right? If the church is going to be effective at bringing the lost to Christ, the first question we all have to ask ourselves is, do I have any credibility among the people that I want to reach? Is my behavior such that I have credibility with those people? Is my language such that I have credibility? Is the way I treat people, the way I forgive, are the things I put on social media, are the things that I communicate in private, are those things such that I would have credibility with those people? And that's what Jesus is dealing with here. Listen to what he says in verse 5. And this, you know, for Jesus, this is about as strong a term as you'll ever see Jesus use in the New Testament. He says, "You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you'll be able to see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye." There's not much worse a thing Jesus could call someone than a hypocrite. And he calls the Pharisees that on a regular basis. And you can sense that there's probably some Pharisees in the audience that he's talking to here. But he says that's the hypocrisy that I'm worried about. As I teach all of you, as Jesus is standing there teaching, he says, what I worry about is the hypocrisy. Because we come together and we worship and we feel like I'm pretty justified because I've been to church, and now I'm going to go out in the community and I'm not really going to act like a Christian, but I'm going to claim the name and I'm going to try to evangelize, and people are going to go, that's hypocritical. Yeah, it's hypocritical. You can't have it both ways. And a lot of us in this room have probably tried. At times in our life, we've tried to walk that, you know, we've tried to walk the line, right? So that we could kind of be religious but not be religious at the same time. So a lot of us have probably tried that. I know when I was younger, I did. A lot of you have probably done that. And what you realize in a relatively short amount of time is that you may think you're doing it, but you can't. You can't be a Christian and a non-Christian at the same time. Scripture says you can't have a fountain that fresh water and salt water comes out at the same time. Doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way. We used to have an artesian well in Crestwell. Any of you ever had artesian water? Nobody in here is that. Marshall, it's the nastiest stuff. Only with COVID would I drink artesian water. When you can't taste nothing or smell it, because it smells like rotten eggs. It's awful. You could not go to that well in Crestwell and grab that handle and get your milk jug and start pumping that water. You know what never came out of that well? Fresh water. Fresh water never came out of it. That's an artesian well. It was artesian water. Fresh water never came out of it. Because you can't have artesian water and fresh water in the same well. It doesn't work that way. And so Jesus says, look, when we go out and we try to pass ourselves off as people who are qualified to minister to the unchurched, when we don't have our relationship with God squared away, we're hypocrites. We're the sick trying to tend to the sick. And Jesus uses pretty strong terminology when he's addressing it. He says, that's hypocritical. You guys are hypocrites when you do that. You got to get that own speck. You can't get that speck out of your brother's eye until you get that log out of your own. This morning, Ricky is going to bring us our communion meditation. The praise team is going to come and lead us in our communion hymn this morning. And as we gather around the Lord's table this morning, we're reminded again of the Apostle Paul saying, when you meet around this table, examine yourself. That this morning, I would challenge you as you partake of the Lord's Supper today, that you examine yourself and you ask yourself a very simple, fundamental question. If I was inclined today to go to a friend and tell them about Jesus, would I have the credibility with that person to convince them of how important he is? Do I have that credibility? And if you're not sure of the answer, then the introspection then becomes, what is the log in my eye that I need to get out? What is it that I need to fix so that I have no doubt about my credibility when I share God's word?